Okay, Craig Pittman is here. Thank you for coming, Craig.
My pleasure.
You live in St. Pete, right?
I do.
All right. How long have you lived here?
Oh, gosh. More than 30 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Man,
I'm about to get the hang of the place.
Since the days of the green benches.
Yes.
Right. Well, it's an interesting town. It has all kinds of strange people here. When I first worked at the St. Pete Times years ago, every time I turned around, there's another character walking down the street or playing the guitar against the drugstore, or a lady on her bike throwing out food to birds and little cups of food for cats, and people screaming at her and throwing stuff.
You know? My favorite, I was driving my kid home from school one day, and we passed by the Museum of Fine Arts, and there was a lady up in the banyan tree in front of the Museum of Fine Arts. She had on this Eastern European outfit. Her red hair was in dreadlocks, and she had an accordion, and she was playing and singing John Denver songs. And I asked my son, who was in elementary school at the time, I said, "Why do you think that lady's up in the tree with an accordion playing and singing John Denver songs?" And he said, "It's Florida, Dad. Who knows?" And I said, "Yeah, we're raising her right. That's the right answer.
That's the name for your next book."
It's Florida, Dad. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. But I asked you to come on because I wanted to talk a little bit about this whole idea of land and endangered species and everything else. And I know way back in the days, and you wrote this tremendous book, The Cattail, New York Times bestseller. I would advise anybody to get this book and just sit down and read it. It's well written. It's very interesting. It's got all kinds of anecdotes, but it tells the true story, and it reveals a lot about what's going on today. The problem is development. It was kind of development back then. Back in the old days, back in the early 80s, and when the Florida Panther, when they decided to save it, so to speak, you know, or find out how many.
All thanks to school children, yeah, voting it to be our state animal.
Fourth graders,
yeah,
that's right.
So thank
that's
heavens for the kids.
God, yes. And and the thing is, the way I read it in your book, and I know it's so accurate. There's a lot of developers out there, or would-be developers, or whatever else. Everybody's thinking about, wow, look at all this land. And here's the darn panther takes 200 or 300 square miles of habitat to do this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it here, and how many lies people make up about what the panther does, and this sort of thing. And you had Colonel Brantley, who was the head of the executive director, I guess, of the Florida Game Commission. He was, what was his title? I forget. It was.
I don't know.
I don't think they have that title anymore. It was called the Fish and Wildlife Council. What was it? FWC.
Well, we currently have a Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
Yeah.
They were formed in 1998 by merging the Game Commission with the Marine Fisheries Commission.
Right.
And that, by the way, was the last time, the one and only time, we had a scientist on the governing board.
Oh, boy.
Julie Morris with New College was appointed to the board by Lawton Childs. And the reason we had that is because Lawton Childs limited his campaign contributions to $100 per person. Since then, everybody who's been appointed to that board has been a campaign contributor to the governor.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Especially right now.
Right now.
So I call it a cabal of developers, basically.
Right, and it's incredible. When I saw I actually sat there and watched that the meeting where they decided to
have a
go ahead with the bear hunt.
Yeah, and completely ignore science. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, 10 years ago when they had the last bear hunt, which turned into a huge embarrassment for them, and they had to shut it down after just 2 days, even though it was supposed to go for a week, they estimated that they had about 4,000 bears. Now they estimate we have just a little bit less than that, but they're going to go ahead with the hunt anyway.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
just crazy.
We've been fighting that all along.
Well, and you know that, and just like the panther in the old days, now you get the bears in weird situations, like the guy that on State Road 29 down in Jerome in the middle of the swamp there, like Fakahatchee Strand area, and he had a he moved into a house that was run by that used to be owned by a guy that had a big fence in the back, and he had wildlife photographers and movie people come in, and they would sit there and take pictures of bobcats and stuff that he had in the backyard, he sold it, and this guy apparently bought it. And if you ride down State Road 29, where they had the signs, only 30 left in the old days, you know, only 30 mm-hmm. remain. And this happened just a couple months ago, and a bear showed up in there. He had a dog tied to a post, that, you know, hooked up to the dog. I mean, what do you call it, a collar. The bear came in and killed the dog. And then, according to the police report, which I haven't seen, I've asked him for it, you know, the Collier County Sheriff's Department. And then he walked in. Then the bear just walked inside, took up the steps into the trailer that the guy lived in, and picked him up and drug him out of that trailer and brought him down and then carried him 100 yards out into the woods and started eating him.
And that's the first documented fatal attack on a human by a bear in Florida history. There are lots of questions about
lots
that.
Lots of questions.
The I think maybe more indicative is a more recent attack where a guy saw a bear in his yard and stepped out of his house to yell at the bear to get away from him. And of course, then the bear attacked him. It's like, dude, you were fine in the house. Why did you step out?
Yeah. Well, in this case, this guy was in the house, and the bear just walked
That's
in.
That's the story.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I believe it.
I've been trying to put my word in. I'd like to get the complete police report on
sure.
that.
Sure.
You know, see what's going on.
See the forensics.
Because that came out in the news, and it just disappeared. No one's been reporting on it. It hasn't.
Well, bear in mind that how reduced our news media have become.
Bear in mind?
Yes, bear in mind.
Well,
and I have to say, there's a very passionate. There are a number of passionate advocates for the bears out there. One of them I profile in my new book, Welcome to Florida, a woman named Katrina Shaddix, who runs Bear Warriors
Bear
United,
Warrior. Mm-hmm.
Who has this fascinating backstory. She was involved in a car crash, wound up with back problems, but received a huge cash settlement, and she's been using that to finance her environmental efforts.
Wow.
And has been giving away straps for your garbage cans so that bears can't get into them, which is sort of the source of the problem, you know?
Yeah.
And so if you secure your trash, you're far less likely to have bears coming up on your property for you to step out of the house and yell at. So, you know.
Why is that not just the thing to do? And instead, you've got hunters out there that want to hunt the bear.
Yeah. And the bear in mind, the FWC used to give away free straps for your trash cans, and they stopped. And the money for doing that dried up. And so it's dependent on people like Katrina to continue that effort.
How long ago did that stop?
Oh, I want to say 2018, something like that, yeah.
And there's so many other things. Just like I remember the story, it just drove me crazy. This woman, her last name was Pretty. P-R-I-D-D-Y.
Lisa Pretty?
Lisa, yeah.
She was a wildlife commissioner.
Yeah, she was a commissioner, and her husband, I guess, died, and she inherited this gigantic ranch down there in the southwest Florida. And the bears, panthers, once in a while, would jump over the fence and go in there and kill one of her calves, and it drove her crazy. And I'm thinking, why don't you just – you're one of the wealthiest people in the whole state. Don't you have enough money to take your fence and build it up like 7 feet so that the bears can't get in there or the panther can't jump
There's
over
a story
it.
About her in this new book.
Oh, really?
Welcome to Florida, yes, where a panther – it's a remarkable story. This panther had been hit by a car near her spread, and she called and reported it. And so wildlife biologists came out and found it. It was not dead and did not have any broken bones, so they took it to Naples Zoo. It spent 2 weeks in rehab, and then they put a collar on it and took it well away from her place, took it down to the Florida Panther National Wildlife Refuge and turned it loose. And they were astonished at what happened next, which was it made its way back to Lisa Pretty's spread, but it never crossed a road. It used underpasses the whole way. It's like, I know now to stay away from cars. But here's the problem is once it got to Lisa Pretty's spread, then it started eating her heifers. And it ate like 11 of them. And she was going nuts, and she was demanding action from the state and the feds. Well, the state, to their credit, said, we can't do what you want us to do. But the feds cleared doing all kinds of harassing things to the panther to chase it away. They were on the verge of approving killing that panther that had made this remarkable recovery when and all of the – basically every panther biologist in the state of Florida was objecting to that. And then the – fortunately, the panther itself said, I think I've had enough now. And pushed back from the table, you know, figuratively, and moved on
somewhere else. Yeah.
But here's the crazy thing is, and there was a lot of coverage of her losses, but what none of the coverage mentioned was that she was getting reimbursed for that by the Naples Zoo. She got out of the 11, I think she got reimbursed for 8. So, you know, not exactly a huge financial loss that she claimed it was. It's just an absolutely fascinating story. And, you know, and you have to really admire the panther for figuring out, hey, I didn't like getting hit by a car. I don't want that to happen again. Maybe I better stick to the underpasses from now on.
Yeah, one of her things was she proposed changing the law to allow incidental take,
mm-hmm.
which means go out and kill any panther you want.
Yeah.
You know, incidental take. What? Yeah, you know, and I remember in your book, Cattail, one of the things I noticed in there, how many acronyms there are for all these.
It's an alphabet soup.
For all these little parts of that panther recovery team, yeah. And everything else. And then when they get a good acronym, they put sub in front of it, mm-hmm. like another part of it. And how can you tell who's on who? What?
My favorite government acronym, by the way, is the Statewide Nuisance Alligator Program, or SNAP for short. So if anybody ever tells you bureaucrats don't have a sense of humor, tell them about SNAP.
Yeah. But still, in her mind, why couldn't she have just built a fence? You know, I don't care if it's 30,000 acres.
Because she wanted to shoot a panther, man.
She wanted to shoot a panther. Yeah. Yeah, okay. And people were supporting that.
And I have to mention, by the way, one of the most vocal wildlife commissioners against that was Ron Bergeron, Alligator Ron, they call him.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the lone commissioner to oppose the bear hunt in 2010, and then they all came around to his mm-hmm. side in the years after that. And then he was opposing Lisa Pretty on panthers, and his point was, you know, he grew up in the Everglades, and he said, these are iconic Florida species. You shouldn't just blow them away. Mm-hmm. There should be a careful consideration and a careful research about the science before you make any sort of destructive decision about this.
Well, that's the same type of mindset you wish that they would have had when the captive breeding thing first started, you know, bringing over the Texas cougars.
Yeah, they were in a panic for the captive breeding. Yeah. That's what happened.
Was it Dave Mayer that said that's not going to work, or that, you know, there are two different subspecies or something, and it's not going to work?
No, I don't think Dave was involved with that, but
Somebody was.
But, you know, the captive breeding – well, there was an animal rights activist who sued Holly – gosh, I'm drawing a blank on her last name. She sued to stop captive breeding because basically their plan was to capture every wild panther and bring them in and do captive breeding. And she sued and got them to stop that, and instead they were going to capture – I think it was 8 or 10 panther kittens and raise them to the age where they were mature enough to breed. But once they got them in custody, they realized that they all had the same genetic problems.
Bingo.
That all of the other panthers had. So mm-hmm. they could not breed reinvigorated panthers. So that's when they turned to Roy McBride, who died just recently,
yeah.
and asking him, Roy, can you go get us some Texas cougars and bring them in? And we'll try and what they call it, genetic restoration. And that worked. And now, you know, we were down to 20 panthers in 1995, and they were circling the drain. And now we got about 200 mm-hmm. out there. If only we had the habitat for that many.
Man. Yeah, Roy McBride, what a colorful character that guy was.
I got to the point in that book, in Cattail, where I realized I didn't know how he went about capturing the 8 female Texas cougars he brought to Florida. So I called him, and at that point, Roy was living in a trailer in Okeechobee, and I had to let the phone ring like 20 times before he picked up. And I told him why I was calling. He said, and he said, you want to know what? And I told him, and he said, okay. And then he launches into the story, which is it's both the funniest part of the book and, of course, the low point, because we think all panthers are going to go extinct at this point. Mm-hmm. But he tells the story, and but I'm just going to say it involves the words blindfolded mule. And encourage you to go get the book. But by the end, I'm on the floor laughing, and I said, Roy, why haven't I ever heard this story before? Nobody ever asked me.
And is it in this book?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it's in that book, yes. It's a chapter called Hail Mary, because that was the Hail Mary pass, is bringing in the Texas Cougars.
Right.
They had no idea if it would work. And spoiler alert, it works so well, they're now doing that with other species around the world.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, the recovery of the Florida panther is one of the greatest recoveries of an endangered species in the whole world.
Yeah, I agree.
And, people in Africa have come over and wanted to know, how did you do it?
Yeah,
all kinds of people are curious in other countries.
And they've done, I think they've done three subsequent genetic analysis that said that the limited involvement of the Texas Cougars did not change the genetic structure of the panthers, that what we have now are purebred panthers. And so it succeeded in every way you could possibly think of. The only problem is now we have more panthers than we have land for panthers, because they keep chipping away at that. In fact, there was just an approval of another development in the middle of panther habitat. It just drives you crazy. It's like we went to all this trouble to save panthers, but we're not saving a place for them to live.
Now, how much of this is coming from Tallahassee? I mean,
everyone who sits on the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission is appointed by Governor Ron DeSantis, or as I call him, Governor Ron Disastrous.
Yes,
because everything he touched turns into a big disaster.
We used to call him Governor DeSantraps.
Yeah, this is the guy who wanted to put golf courses in a state park.
Right.
He wants to paint out every rainbow crosswalk in Florida. He's really hoping nobody pays attention to Hope, Florida anymore, because that's a huge scandal. He's desperately unpopular, and he can't understand why people oppose him. It's like, you don't get it yet, do you?
Well, it's unbelievable, that whole situation, especially like you and myself. I was down there way back in those days, and to see the land. I used to leave my house in St. Pete, and I'd go certain different ways, you know. And I'd go out to, and even going down the interstate, it was just a whole lot of nothing. And suddenly there's subdivisions all over the place. And sometimes they take the name Panther Trace.
Yeah, yeah. There's a tradition in Florida of naming subdivisions against what they pushed out. So, you know, no more. You see Cypress Trace. Oh, no more trace of the Cypress.
Yeah.
My favorite one is in Naples. It's the Wilderness Country Club.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. That's excellent. Excellent.
Every day in Florida is Irony Appreciation Day.
Well, you know, you can go out to State Road 70 or State Road 64, those east-west roads across Florida. And it used to be, in fact, when I was working for the Seminole Indians, I'd come up that way on 27 and then either go 64 or 70 to get to the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like nothing out there, you know. And now,
and yet there was a lot out there because it was natural. See, that's part of the problem.
Well,
people look at undeveloped property and say, oh, there's nothing there.
Yeah,
it's like, no, there's a lot there. It's just not man-made.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny. I watched it happen.
Mm-hmm.
You see all of a sudden you see a bunch of bulldozers out there cutting down all the trees. And you go a little further, and you've got somebody out there, you know, laying groundwork and putting the sewage in and everything else. And you go further, and they start building. There's the foundations of the houses. There's another one coming up, and the houses are almost built. And then finally, at the end, and this is no joke, the last thing that happens is the developer comes out and sticks a tree, a little baby tree, right in the middle of the front yard.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Okay, there's your tree.
Yeah.
Well, wait 30 years, it'll be a forest here.
Yeah, it's crazy. And of course, while the bulldozers are out there, they're very busy burying all the gopher tortoises.
Yeah.
So.
Well, this, the Marjorie Douglas property up in Pinellas County and up near Dunedin, in Dunedin, 44 acres, and she wanted, she died, and you know, everything in Dunedin, there's a lot of, her name is on everything. She's a very wealthy lady, had a lot of money, and she wanted it to go to preserve this place. And on the other hand, they were divided in the council in the county about hey, you know, this could be we could put pickleball courts out here or whatever else,
yeah, that's what we need, more pickleball courts.
And if you yeah, right. And if you look at the state of Florida from the air, and you look at Pinellas County, here's that one place that stands out like a sore thumb, that area in Dunedin. And finally, the public got together, and just like they did at Alligator Alcatraz, Clyde Butcher, and like a mile long on each mm-hmm. either side of Tamiami Trail.
Well, and that was largely due to Betty Osceola,
yes,
who did
yes.
that. All praise to her and yep. Jessica Namath, Joe Namath's daughter,
uh-huh.
who
mm-hmm.
organized all those crowds.
I'd like to get Betty on the radio somehow.
She's great. We did I do a podcast called Welcome to Florida, and we had her on, and she is awesome. She actually still lives in a chicky hut.
Yeah.
And she's a very dedicated person, and was a fascinating interview.
But the big gun came in when the Miccosukee tribe itself, the, mm-hmm. the organized Miccosukee
yes.
tribe, came in with their money. You can't beat the Indians in any of those things. And that's mm-hmm. why I think you don't see Trump is not saying anything about Alligator Alcatraz. You know, he's not really saying anything. But DeSantis say, oh, it's going to stay open. It's going to stay open.
But, and it's such a waste of money. I mean, even if you don't care about the environment, you should care about the fact that they committed to spending $350 million to put this source of pollution in the middle of the Big Cypress National mm-hmm. Preserve. I mean, it's just insane. And as a taxpayer, you should be outraged by that. You know, they're spending like $10 million for what are they calling it, Deportation Depot up in Baker County, which is a pre-existing state prison. But they like the merchandising that they can get off of Alligator Alcatraz, because the Republican Party of Florida sold merchandise with the name Alligator Alcatraz on it, and they got money off it. They were going to sell merchandise for Deportation Depot, but Home Depot objected, so they had to withdraw that merchandise.
Well, they've got the signs out there, really, yeah. You know, standard road signs, big mm-hmm. giant things, Alligator, Alcatraz.
And people stop and snap selfies there.
Yeah, yeah.
And ignore the protesters.
But the light, that's the other problem.
Oh, yeah. It used to be a dark
20
sky
miles
place.
Around,
yeah.
You know.
It's like having a football stadium in the middle of a natural area.
Yeah, we had Craig, what's his name, Clyde Butcher.
Oh, yeah.
And his wife came up here.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, he can't. Once it gets dark, that gigantic light comes on, and he has to go back to Venice he can't spend the night
yeah.
in his own place.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, there's no curtain that can block that out.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a gigantic thing out there. And of course, and Betty had talked, and I've seen her on TV talking about how it just washes over the whole Miccosukee thing out there. And,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're directly affected because they live there. They live next to this place, and it's incredible.
What do you see as the future here?
For Alligator Alcatraz? Well, I don't think...
The whole state, this whole idea of developing all the land and getting rid of the wildlife.
I'm going to tell you the way the politics is going, but then I'm going to tell you the other side of it. The politics, I think, is more and more focused on we have to please the developers because that's who pays our bills. And so that's why you saw the legislature most recently pass Senate Bill 180, which basically says whatever lessons you learned from the hurricane, forget them, because we're going to let people build back exactly where they were and even make it worse than it was before, and there's nothing local governments can do about it. And so I think so far 10 or 11 local governments have signed up to sue to get that law declared unconstitutional. So, but the legislature is basically in the back pockets of the developers right now, and so is Governor DeSantis. In fact, one of my nicknames for him is Developer Santis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, and this was the heartening thing, is people stand up to this stuff. People are realizing, hey, we don't like the direction things are going. Look at all the protests that occurred when DeSantis wanted to put golf courses in the state parks. Yeah. People went nuts, and I mean people from both parties, and that was heartening to see. And the and they ultimately not only got the Folds of Honor people to withdraw their request to do it, but they got the legislature to pass a law that says you can't do that ever. That's not allowed, because of course Rick Scott tried to do it when he was governor as well. So it's that's the power people have right now, is to stand up and say no. And the more we see them do that, the more we'll see good outcomes, as opposed to just letting the politicians run things.
Who was the president that dedicated Everglades National Park?
Harry Truman.
Truman.
Yeah.
And in his speech, he has begins his speech, just this enormous speech that's saying, don't ever, don't, basically, I'm just, you know, but don't ever. And never in the in the world do anything to this land. This land needs to be totally preserved. And he's talking about that whole southern part of Florida.
Ah, he was woke. We don't care.
So yeah. So you know.
Yeah.
I mean, but there's actually a him. There's a place on the internet where you can his actual speech. Mm-hmm. Him speaking it. You know, but and Tim's got that. I think we ran it one time here on the show.
Nice.
As this thing's been going on, but. And then how can you turn around then and do that?
Well, I suggested that their next move was going to be to take Marjorie Stoneman Douglas's house in Coconut Grove and declare it to be a latrine.
Yeah.
And you can use a copy of the Sunshine Law as your toilet paper.
Yeah. Oh, boy. She. Well, the funny thing is that I had that Save the Florida Panther organization years ago. And that what broke it up were the people that didn't like the captive breeding. They didn't like the fact that Big Guy, remember Big Guy, the cat
Big
that
guy.
Got hit by the truck driver, but he actually stopped and called it in, and they gave him an award.
I think he's the only one who ever did that.
Yeah. And so they took the cat up to White Oak Plantation, which is have you ever been up there?
I have not, but I know about it.
Oh, it's a really bizarre place. I mean, he's got two of everything. I mean, he's got
all he needs now is the ark.
Yeah, right. And they, it just, in fact, we made Ernie Simmons was a famous wildlife artist, and he came, and we got him permission to be in the same pen. I mean, it's not a pen; it's a big, it's like a half an acre. This cat had
big enclosure,
but he was permanently injured. He couldn't be put out into the wild. And Ernie stood out there, hung out there for like 3 days, you know, sketching everything. He did this beautiful panther. I've got a couple of those. I'll get one out. I'd like to give one to you. You know, there's only a couple of them left. But that raised thousands of dollars for the Save the Panther movement. And the other thing was Publix decided to put out a coloring book that was pointed towards children that were fourth or fifth grade, and they had the coloring, and that was a huge thing.
That's awesome. See, in the last piece in my book, Welcome to Florida, is about things you should teach your kids about Florida, and I mentioned Nature's Classroom over in Hillsborough County, which is a terrific program, and I said, we should have something like this in all 67 counties, not just in the one. But I suggested, you know, books like Hoot by Carl Hiaasen, The Lion's Paw by Rob White, A Land Remembered by Patrick Smith. Those are good books. And you should take your kids to swim in a spring, to float down a spring-fed river, take them over to, say, Apollo Beach to see a gathering of manatees during cold weather. Take them where they can see dolphins leaping ahead of your boat. Educate them that this is a place worth fighting for. And when they grow up, they won't forget.
I saw the other day we were on 301 heading north towards I-4. And out south of there for a ways. And there's a spillway or some kind of waterway out in the middle of nowhere there. And there's a big giant pipe that must go at least a quarter mile or a half a mile that's just sticking up there, and it's completely covered with birds standing there, like all next to each other. As you're driving the car, you don't even see the end of it, and then there's like one pelican or one other kind. They were all like cormorants, you know. I thought, wow, look at this. I mean, you know, and I was kind of thinking that same thing that you were just talking about. Just how can people see these things? I mean, just well, Clyde Butcher apparently he has a swamp walk that he offers free to.
I've been on one. Okay. Yeah, it's great. I
call your county like fifth graders or there's some mm-hmm. age group there, and the teachers bring them out there in the. And you know,
I have to tell you, I have to warn you though, you know, since it's swamp water, it's clean, it's pure, but it's a little cold too. So there was a point in the swamp walk where we went from where the water was at our knees to suddenly it was up on our waist, and all the guys started talking kind of high like that. So just bear that in mind. That's going to happen.
right. Well, you know, I'm in the process of. writing a little book about some of the stuff that I've been around in the journalism world, and Clyde, one of the amazing things that I didn't know and I found out, and that was Clyde told me the story when he was here, and that was something was driving him to get out of California. His business wasn't doing well or anything else, and he took a sailing trip with his family and all this stuff. And he was going down 27 one day in the car with his wife, and here was a Tom Gaskin Cypress Tree Museum.
Yep.
And his wife said, Clyde, stop it. I don't want to see that damn thing. I don't know what a cypress knee is. Hey, and she made him do it. Mm-hmm. He pulled in there, and he just stood by the car, didn't do anything, and she was walking around, and Tom came out, who was like a little tiny gnome.
He was a character.
A little guy next to a big old bear, you know, mm-hmm. Clyde. And he said, let me show you the greatest swamp in the history of the world, or something like that, you know. And so he followed him out there, you know, and they went and got and all of a sudden, he turned around the corner, and he noticed that he couldn't hear U.S. 27 anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It was like right outside, but around the corner of the building, and here was this living swamp. And he had this rickety swamp walk, 2x4s stuck into the muck, and in between them they had planks that were.
I was there. I remember.
Oh, you've been there. Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a kind of rickety mm-hmm. thing. You never know what's going to happen there. And Clyde, you know, and he walked down that thing and he stopped and he just, you know, he said, this is Florida.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I want to be. This is where I want to be.
And did he tell you the story about his son also?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That was a sad thing.
But that's what led to him focusing on black and white photography.
That's right.
Which brings out all the textures. You know, the colors in Florida don't leap out, but the textures certainly do, and that's what makes his photos so great.
Have you seen the book by Tom Schroeder and somebody else? I forget the guy's name. He wrote the story of that change. It's a beautiful, beautifully written book, and it was done many years ago. And Clyde's pictures are in there,
mm-hmm.
and he gets the inside. How Clyde even actually got out to Tamiami Trail and found a place to live. He just happened, his wife happened, another time where she happened to just stop in at that Orchid Isle. There used to be a hermit that lived out there for 40 mm-hmm. years. And he was getting demented and everything. And I guess the
living in Florida will do that too.
Yeah. The Park Service or somebody put up a sign saying for sale. And she goes, whoa. And she went back there with Clyde, and he came out with a shotgun and shot it, and they had to get. And to make a long story short, the Park Service was begging, just about begging Clyde and his wife, please, because this hermit was something else. He'd running around naked on the road and waving at people, shooting them birds and everything, mm-hmm.
and you know, like you do,
yeah. And so that's where they moved and made mm-hmm. their gallery right there, and. I think it was Oscar Thompson, who was a famous environmentalist that lived in that area, and took Clyde out back and showed him. There's the Everglades,
yeah,
the River of Grass, you know, and that just told that his life changed in those years. And, mm-hmm. and of course, his son died when they moved. When they first moved to Florida, they were living in Fort Myers or somewhere over there, and mm-hmm. it was a drunken driver type thing. And whoa, man, that was bad. But they've made up, and a lot of things that they talk about is connected to him. Weird things like a lock on a on the old hermit had a lock on some kind of a shed or something, and she noticed the combination was 1186 or something like that, like 11786 or something like that. That he was the one is their first boy, and then 17 he was 17 in 86 was the year that he got, that he died, and that cemented the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very 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 strong story. And,
well, Clyde's a terrific artist, and if anybody is not familiar with his work, I'd strongly encourage you to go online, if nothing else, and look up some of his
guess
work.
Whose birthday it is today?
Is it Clyde? Oh, it's Clyde's
Clyde
birthday.
Burchard,
that's right. That's
September
right.
6th.
Yeah, yeah. So happy birthday, Clyde.
Yeah, happy birthday. They may be listening. I don't know, you know. But that's fabulous. Well, I don't, you know, we could talk for hours. Jay's making a weird sign. Is that acting up on you?
Did
again,
we wake you
Jay?
Up, Jay? I'm
no?
sorry.
We've got to make an announcement, right?
No.
I thought you had to every so often say
no.
The Will McLean.
Carry on.
Thing. Oh, okay. Carry on. All right. Well, I think we've gone through a lot of stuff here, mm-hmm. and we've I grew up in Cocoa, Rockledge, and I used to go back all the time. The last time that my wife and I went back there, I got lost. I couldn't. I'm going down. I'm trying to stay away from I-4, so trying to go some of the back roads, mm-hmm. and then you get on there, and it's suddenly the Disney World thing. Suddenly, I found myself driving into Disney World. I didn't even. I finally had to get my brother-in-law over there and say, "Well, how does it? How do you get back there? You know, the old fish camp, all the stuff that I knew
gone.
On 520."
Yeah, yeah. I go back to my hometown, Pensacola, and I get disoriented. But part of that's because when I first moved down to this part of the state, I got messed up every day for a year because the Gulf of Mexico was in the wrong place. You know, it should be south of me, and now it's over here. What? But now I go back up to Pensacola, and because of all the development, it's nothing's where it should be.
When I first moved here, I was always turning left when I meant to turn right. You know, because the lure of the Atlantic—that's where I grew up. You know, and then you go over here, and you're like, okay, what? You know, when I'm coming out, like, which way is the Gulf? I'd actually, you know, unbelievable. Yeah. Well, the only other thing I had here is I was going to give it to you. There's a deadly kissing bug disease spread.
I never kiss bugs. That's my policy.
It's in multiple states around the country, mostly out west, and it's a life-threatening parasitic disease. And the World Health Organization estimates it annually kills 10,000 people worldwide.
So our Surgeon General will no doubt recommend people start kissing him immediately.
Well, he's got to cover, he's got to clear that with Robert Kennedy first. You know that. So, anyway. Well, what about a song?
Alrighty. Let's spin up with Patty's permission, let's spin up a Panama Red tune. Is that all right with you, Patty?
Absolutely.
Before you do that, let me just say, the new book,
Welcome to Florida.
Where can people get that?
You can buy it online. You can buy it in the stores. I highly recommend you go to Tombolo Books if you have not been there before. Tombolo is a terrific bookstore, and they stock all of my stuff. And if you ask them nicely, they'll call me up and ask me to come sign it. So I'll do that too.
All right.
I don't live too far from Tombolo.
Okay. And how long has it been out?
It came out in March. And let me just say a word about the wonderful cover by cartoonist Andy Marlette from Pensacola.
Okay.
He was the editorial cartoonist there and also draws a syndicated comic strip called Shrimp and Grits.
Shrimp and Grits,
yeah,
okay.
Which I'm hungry just talking about it.
Yeah.
anyway, and there's a picture of a manatee on the cover who's holding a sign that says WWJBD, and people always ask me, what does that mean? Is he talking about Jeb Bush? No, it's what would Jimmy Buffett do?
All right. Thanks for coming down.
My pleasure.